In the midst of all of the difficulties in the days of the judges, in the English Bible, right between Judges and 1 Samuel, we have the story of Ruth, a story that represents a wonderful example of faith and devotion from a foreigner, no less. It's very interesting because, as we said, Ruth in the English Bible comes between Judges and 1 Samuel. But in the Hebrew Bible, it's considered part of the Ketuvim, part of the writings. It's among the books of the Megillah, the five scrolls. And there are a couple versions of that Bible in which Ruth will follow Proverbs, as if Ruth is the embodiment of the characteristics of the worthy woman of Proverbs 31, 10 through 31. Although in most of the traditional forms of the Tanakh that you will find today, it comes after Ecclesiastes and Esther and things of that nature. So Ruth certainly is virtuous, honorable, and loyal, and it's good for us to consider the story of Ruth. So we don't know anything about the person who wrote Ruth. We do not doubt the inspiration of the story. Fact that she is identified in Matthew 1 and verse 5 as one of the descendants, sorry, the ancestors of Jesus, is an indication how the story is preserved and believed to have its purpose and value in the text here. We can recognize that the events are taking place during the time of the judges, and it's likely closer toward the end of the period, since Ruth is only a couple generations removed from David, who reigns around 1000 BC. We can imagine that chapter 1 is going to cover at least a decade or so, and the rest of it may only cover a few months. It is certainly written sometime during or after the time of David, since he is identified in Ruth 4 and verse 22. We do not know when it would have been written otherwise beyond that, and it is being compiled to everything else, probably by the days of the exile. Now, the audience would be Israel in the days of the kings and afterward, and there's a lot that we can gain from it. And it's telling the story of Ruth, the great-grandmother of David. And it is providing an example here of her faith and what she is all about. So we see the situation in chapter 1, that there's a famine in the land of Judah. And so a man from Bethlehem in Judah goes to live as a resident foreigner, as an alien in the land of Moab. And we're told the man's name is Elimelech, his wife is Naomi. He has sons Mahlon and Chilion, that they're Ephrathites of Bethlehem in Judah. The very fact that they are leaving the land of Judah and going to Moab is an unfortunate reversal. It is a reversal of the conquest. It is an indication of the sinfulness of the people and the presence of sin. And we can understand why they would make this move if they were desperate because they're trying to survive. On the other hand, to leave the promised land to go to the land of the nations around them would not be looked upon kindly by God. And we can see what happens when they leave. Elimelech has a wife named Naomi, and Mahlon and Chilion, while they were there in the land of Moab, marry Orpah and Ruth, Ruth and Orpah, respectively. Elimelech died previously, and Mahlon and Chilion also dies. And so now the three women, Naomi, Orpah, and Ruth, are left alone. And this is a time and place where to be a widow meant to have no real standing in society, to be at the mercy and whims of others. It was not a good position in which to find themselves. And so because of this, Naomi is now a widow in a foreign land. It's not a good place for her. So she determines that she's going to go back to Judah, to Bethlehem. And she had heard that Yahweh had shown concern for his people and that the famine had been alleviated. And so they're about to leave. And she tells both Orpah and Ruth that they need to leave. Because she, even if she were to have a, you know, get find a guy now and, you know, become pregnant, it would take, you know, at least, what, 15, 20 years to have a son for them to marry. She really can't provide for them what they need. And so he tell them to leave, but they refuse. They would cling to her. But then after she explained more, Orpah decided that she would leave. And so she left. And Naomi even says to her, look, your sister-in-law left. Why haven't you left? And that's when Ruth cries out in verse 16, stop urging me to abandon you. For everywhere you go, I will go. Wherever you live, I will live. Your people will become my people. Your God will become my God. Wherever you die, I will die, and there I will be buried. May Yahweh punish me severely if I do not keep my promise. Only death will be able to separate me from you. A very powerful message, in fact. This is still read sometimes at weddings and things of that nature. It is Ruth who is getting a Moabitess. She is a descendant of the Moabites. She would recognize Yahweh as God of Israel, but they had Chemosh as their God. And again, Elimelech and Naomi, Mahlon, Chilion are not exactly here sterling representatives of Israelite faith and religion. They've abandoned the land of Judah for the land of Moab. But for whatever reason, Ruth feels a kinship to Naomi. She wants to be identified with Naomi and the people of Naomi and the God of Naomi, to identify herself with Yahweh. And she does not want Naomi to have her passed off. And so Naomi relents, and Ruth and Naomi return to Bethlehem. Bethlehem's never been a large place. As everybody knows what's going on, right? And they see Naomi back with this Moabitess and nobody else. And they're all asking, can this be Naomi? Naomi means pleasant in Hebrew. And so she says, no longer call me not Naomi. She says, call me Mara, call me bitter, because the sovereign one has treated me harshly. I left here full, but Yahweh has caused me to return empty-handed. Why do you call me Naomi pleasant when I have been caused to suffer so much? We can feel and hear the pain there, right? This is a woman who has been broken by all the things that she's gone through, all of her losses, and now she's trying to find a way here in Bethlehem. It's important to recognize, again, the cultural context of the time, that Elimelech would have had land. And the portion of land those Elimelechs would not have gone to anyone else while he was gone. It had been there for him to come back to. But his widow has come back to it. There's no, they don't have a man with them to claim the land. Mahlon has also died, therefore he can't claim the land of his father Elimelech. So it's sitting out there somewhat unclaimed. There'll need to be somebody who can redeem it for her and redeem her in order to accomplish these things. And that's why in chapter we're told that there is a near kinsman, a near relative of Elimelech, whose name is Boaz. And we're told about him because Ruth asked Naomi to go out in the fields to glean. And this is, again, indicating their abject poverty, that in the law there was provision that you did not, you know, cut all of your fields. You left the outside ring of the field so that people could glean and get some food from it who were poor and had nothing else. So Ruth goes and gathers grain, and she happens up in Boaz's field. And when Boaz comes in and greets her, you know, to the harvester, says, may Yahweh be with you. They reply, may Yahweh bless you. He sees Ruth, asks who she is. And the servant says, she's the Moabite woman who came back with Naomi from Moab. And she asked here if she could, you know, follow the harvesters. And she's worked hard here to get something and only rested a short time. And then Boaz goes and speaks to her and says, you know, don't go anywhere else. You may go with my female workers. I'll tell them I need to leave you alone. And you may get some water here and get water when you're thirsty. And Ruth knelt and asked why he was being kind to her, even though she was a foreigner. And Boaz said that he had received a full report of all she had done for Naomi and how she had left and abandoned her family and her land and everything she'd ever known to come to live among the Israelites, and asked that Yahweh would reward her efforts. And later on at mealtime, Boaz encouraged her to come and get some food. And she ate some and took some back with her. And then he told his servants, let her even gather among the bundles, going well beyond what was required of the law, actually, to take some of his food stash, whatever he was going to do with it, and make sure that they would leave extra grain for her to pick up, basically to provide extra for her here at the end in chapter 2. Chapter 2, verse 18, she returns to Naomi and gives the roasted grain and gives a full report to Naomi. And Naomi said, may Boaz be rewarded by Yahweh because of the loyalty he has shown on behalf of the dead to the living, because of Elimelech and the family. And she explained to Ruth how he's a close relative, a guardian, able to be a redeemer. And so Naomi, Ruth Feather told Naomi about what he had said, and Naomi said she should do that and stay there because, again, they're both in a very easily exploitable, oppressible situation, very easy for her to suffer various from sexual assault and things. And so to find a protector, find a place where they can get food and to be taken care of was very important for them. And so as chapter three begins, Naomi wants to establish things for Ruth and for themselves. And he said, Boaz, that you're the one you're working for, he's a close relative. So you need to clean yourself up. You need to go down to the threshing floor. Don't let him know until he's done. And then uncover his legs and lay beside him. He'll tell you what you're supposed to do. And so he does this, right? It's the mealtime. They're out in the fields. He's merry with wine. They've had a good amount to drink. They're doing well. So he sleeps there. And then Ruth does as Naomi said. And so, he's in the middle of the night, wakes up. Listen, there's a woman next to him. What on earth is going on here? And he asks who she was. I am Ruth, your servant. Mary, your servant. You are a guardian of the family interest. The NET here is being a little expansive here. But it's explaining the thing, right? The grabbing of the feet, whatever that means, whatever maybe euphemism might be involved here, is indicating this desire for receiving the protection of the Redeemer. And Boaz said that she should be rewarded by Yahweh for this. It's a greater act of devotion than at first because she did not seek to marry young men, but him who was ostensibly a little older. And so he would do what he needed to do. Yes, he was a near relative, a guardian in this case, one of the Goel, but there was a nearer one. And so he would have to go through and do what needed to be done. And she was there with him, woke up before it was light because he wanted to make sure that Boaz wanted to make sure no one thought anything improper happened. So he sent her off with some food. And Naomi told her to be encouraged. She was going to take care of what needed to be taken care of. And so in chapter four, we see this how this gets done. So remember, this is the judges period. There's no centralized authority in Israel. So we see Boaz going into the city of Bethlehem, a village of Bethlehem, really. And he saw, because small town people all around, the closer relative. And so he grabs this guy. I never told his name. And so he brings them to where the elders sit. Elders sit in the village gate. Elders are older men, men of authority, men who would be seen as the kind of authoritative around the village, and whatever they would determine in this kind of context would have the force of law. And so he declares that Naomi returned and is selling the portion of land that belongs to Elimelech. And so he wants this nearer redeemer to acquire it if he wants. And the nearer redeemer is more than happy to acquire the land. But then Boaz brings it and says, well, when you acquire the field, you also are going to have to acquire Ruth and to preserve his family by raising up a descendant who will inherit his property. What's going on here? Well, this whole idea of redemption goes to a provision in Deuteronomy, which we have called levirate marriage. In the situation, what happens is, and this is a concern about property, inheritance, and rights. What happens if a guy dies and has no sons to inherit the property? If there's daughters to inherit the property, the daughter should marry within the tribe, as we saw the daughters of Zelophehad in Numbers. But here, Elimelech has no descendants. The only one there is Ruth the Moabitess. And so they need to have somebody to continue the family. And so the idea of levirate marriage is that a man would take the deceased brother's widow and treat her as a wife, at least enough for her to have a child, a son who would be able to therefore inherit everything that would belong to the dead man. And so in this situation here, to redeem the field, you'd also have to redeem Ruth, to take her as a wife, and through her to have children who would be recognized children of Elimelech and Naomi to inherit the estate of Elimelech, whatever is there. And this closer relative's like, I don't want to question or challenge my inheritance by doing this. You can take him. You can have her. You can take it. And so that way, he removed his sandal. This was a sign apparently there where he was officially giving up of his closest right to do this. And so thus Boaz said before these people, you have now seen that I have acquired from Naomi all that belonged to Elimelech, Chilion, and Mahlon. I've also acquired Ruth, the wife of Mahlon, to what to my wife to raise up a descendant who will inherit his property, so that the name of Elimelech would not disappear within Israel. And they are witnesses. And they are witnesses, and they pray that Yahweh would make the woman as Rachel and Leah, and built up the house of Israel, like Perez, whom Tamar bore to Judah, and that there would be descendants that would be brought up of this woman. And so Boaz thus marries Ruth, and she conceives, and it's interesting, the village would say to Naomi, may Yahweh be praised because he has not left without a guardian today. May he become famous in Israel. That Ruth is better to her than seven sons. That Naomi takes the child and placed him on her lap. She became his caregiver because, again, she becomes her son kind of by proxy here because of the inheritance law. And the name is Obed. Obed is the son born to Naomi, and he becomes the father of Jesse. And Jesse, of course, is the father of David. Now we know why the story of Ruth is here, because Ruth is David's great grandmother. And so the book ends with the generations. Perez, who of course was the son of Judah, Ram, Aminadab, Nahshon, Salmon, Boaz, Obed, Jesse, David. And that's how we get to David, and shows where Ruth fits into the story. So Ruth, very, very famous book for a lot of things, even though it's a very short book. A lot has been said about Ruth and her character and how God provided for her and preserved her. And of course, she is now the not only, of course, the great grandfather of David, but that means that she is also one of the ancestors of Jesus. And that's what Matthew makes explicit there in the genealogy that he presents. A lot of extra details in the story to consider. Some of them less than pleasant. The question, Boaz, did he already have a wife and family? There's every reason to believe that he would have. But he takes on Ruth as an additional wife. Again, a lot of people want to act like Ruth and Boaz is the ultimate love story. And there is faithfulness there and fidelity and upholding commitments and honor, but that doesn't necessarily mean that they were exclusive. So we need to be careful about having people ask for their Boaz and things of that nature, which has become a trope in certain Christian subcultures. Nevertheless, it still is a very powerful, compelling story of God's faithfulness in the face of a lot of distress, right? This is a terrible time, and Elimelech and Naomi are in a terrible predicament, and they ultimately make some pretty bad decisions. And yet, throughout all these bad decisions, somehow, the people of God, people of Yahweh, and Yahweh is compelling to Ruth, able to abandon her family and everything she's ever known to go to be with these people, even though they are fleeing from their land because their God seemingly is not that happy with them. And so that's why she's a compelling story. And of course, it's the also thing that David himself has Moabite in his ancestry. His great grandmother's a Moabitess. And the story is no doubt also trying to probably smooth that over, why we should honor Ruth and not consider her a foreign interloper because of her great faith and commitment to the people of God. So that's what we see in the book of Ruth. We're so glad that you've joined us as we considered it. If you have any questions, comments, or thoughts about Ruth, love to hear about it. Let us know in the comments. And please share this and subscribe to us. And if we can be of any service, please reach out to us. I'm Ethan with the Venice Church of Christ. We are a non-denominational church of Christians in Los Angeles. We'd love to be of assistance and encouragement to you. Please reach out to us if we can pray for you. If you'd like to study with us, if you'd like to meet with us at VeniceChurchChrist.org. You can also find us on social media at Venice Church or Venice Church of Christ. Thanks again for joining us, and may the Lord bless and keep you until we're able to meet again.